Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share positive, life-affirming information. And we begin our program today with a look at the Sun Yat-sen University in Taiwan. They found that berries are really good for your heart. Why? Because they impact our blood platelets. So the potential cardiovascular benefits of what are called anthocyanins may be associated with their ability to influence the expression of chemicals by platelets in the blood. That's in a new randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial, the gold standard, and it was published in a highly respected peer-reviewed journal, Nutrition and Metabolism. And what it does, it deepens our understanding of the heart health benefits of the anthocyanins, the pigments that give color to the different fruits and vegetables, and like black raspberries and blueberries and blackberries and black currants. Chinese scientists report that 320 milligrams per day of the anthocyanins, equivalent to about 100 grams of fresh blueberries, and that would be about 3 ounces. You know, that's not even a cup. So it's certainly within most people's means to have a cup of blueberries or black currants. And they did this for 24 weeks. And what they found was a significant reduction in platelet, what is called chemokine levels, which correlated to lower levels of inflammation in people, especially those with elevated cholesterol levels. Now, the platelet chemokines, C-H-E-M-O-K-I-N-E-S, are involved in inflammatory reactions, immune responses, and other aspects of the development of atherosclerosis. And so that, in lay language, means the more berries that you consume, and hopefully at least 2 servings a day of berries, the more beneficial it is to the platelets and the serum lipids and tamping down inflammation in the body. Now, that's inflammation all over the body, the brain, and that helps protect your brain from neurodegenerative conditions like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis. So that's what it does. Simple, right to the point. Next up is a study from the University of Seville, which is in Spain, and they too want something for us to know about the anti-inflammatory molecular mechanisms induced by oleic acid, O-L-E-I-C. The Mediterranean diet was recognized by UNESCO as an intangible cultural heritage of humanity. Olive oil is the most characteristic food of this diet due to its high nutraceutical value, functional value, meaning it really functions in your body. And only go for the brands that are reputable because there's a huge business in falsifying oils, meaning oils that are not olive oil. They can be sunflower oil, safflower oil, soy oil, inexpensive, that they add a little bit of olive oil to, and then through their illegal processes, get it into American markets. You can go to Consumers Reporter, other publications, and find out which are the legitimate oils. Now, I always buy from, well, I don't want to promote any brands, but I look them up and then I contact them and ask, what do you do to make sure that if something is grown and you're branding it, it's your private label, that it's extra virgin, organic, first press, and then they give you the information. And that's the only way you should be using these oils. The cheap oils, I would never use any of the cheap brand oils. That's where you're going to get in trouble. In any case, if you go to the Mediterranean, I'm sure many of you have been there. If you haven't, it's really one of the most beautiful places in the world to go. The what is known as the Western Mediterranean, Italy, of course, Greece, Spain, Portugal, France. These are some of the areas. And the cuisine is just spectacular. They emphasize a lot of olives. Now, I was actually in a person's barn in the Italian Alps a few years ago. My brothers and I went over there, and I wanted to see why is it that the people in the country, in Italy, live much longer lives than those in the suburbs or the cities. And I have a perfect situation where, by happenstance, I met a family, and it was kind of, you'd got a kick out of this. If you're ever in the Italian Alps, you'll notice that there's small little hamlets, maybe anywhere from 6 to 15 homes. These are generally very old homes. Some can be 300 to 500, 800 years old. I was in one home that was 800 years old. And you can smell that oldness in the wood and in the structure. And one of my buddies, well, two of my buddies, Franco Pantoni and another one, who's a medical doctor, they speak, of course, fluent Italian. And they would ask, would it be all right? This is a person from the United States. And he would like to ask you about your life. And he said, fine. And I also agreed that I would do a day's labor because I'm a farmer. I'm a certified organic farmer. I teach farming. And I've had very successful farms. I started the first food co-op that I'm aware of on the East Coast of the United States, the High Falls Food Co-op. So anyhow, I said, anything you want me to do, I'll be happy to do. And they really didn't care. But I jumped in, and I'm walking up a hill with a sack. Well, it looked like an apron, but with a huge pocket that you would, as you bent over and picking tomatoes, you would then drop them in there. Anyhow, I was working with a guy who was 93 years of age, and he had legs like a, you know, like a fullback on a football team, and he was just as insightful as possible. And he said this to me. He said, we had spent some hours together. He said, are you going to go to Milan? I said, hadn't planned on it. Why? He said, well, I have a son there. And in fact, I have two sons there. One is a banker and the other is a doctor. And when they lived here, they were always healthy, exercising the hills here. And he said, drop in on them. We'll give you the information. And just say that you're sending a message from your mother and father that they should take a break. They're too stressed because evidently they talk on the phone all the time. And we did that. But I was all these miles, we were going about 20 miles that day. I was running it. They had a Jeep, and I was running in front of the Jeep because I wanted to get my work out of him because I was also training for a marathon. So it was just delightful. So if you ever go to Italy, yes, all the tourist attractions, especially in Venice, spectacular. If you can get there at time of the year when the tourists aren't there, which is the winter time, a winter, spring, and fall, best time to visit these countries. In any case, you want to see some of the beautiful statues and artwork is spectacular, and the Italian people are just wonderful people. And they have these wonderful complexions and just really beautiful people and very open, very emotionally expressive. So we went in to decide to go up to Milan. What an experience that was. First, from the outside, you can't see inside. They don't have windows right down the street. So, you know, you walk by, you see a light on. No, it's like a wall. Behind that wall is frequently a courtyard. But when you get into these apartments, they're huge. I mean, nothing like it in the United States. And they're old. And marble floors, marble steps, beautiful types of craftsmanship that went into the masonry, etc., the molding. Anyhow, I had an opportunity to spend one day with the son of the farmer in the country. Now, mind you, in the country, they had their own apothecary, meaning they had a barn where they had a wall of olives, literally jars of olives. I'm guessing, probably about 60 to 80 different types of olives, and they cure differently. Something you never see in an American barn. You used to. In fact, as a kid, I remember seeing something very similar to this in my great aunt's farm over in Little Hocking, Ohio, where you went in. And boy, it was clean. There was no dust and mold in the air. And she had all these bags, paper bags. And in those paper bags were herbs. And she wrote on the outside the date that they were put in there and then what they were. And I said, Aunt Myrtle, what are these? And she said, oh, when people get sick, you know, I know which herbs to use. You know, it's been something passed down. And then I saw these big 55-gallon wooden barrels. What's in there? She said, well, you can't grow stuff all the year here. So when we're in season and we're harvesting things, we want to preserve them. So we dry them. How do you dry them? So she takes me outside, and it just so happens they were drying peaches and apricots. And so first they wash them off, and then they cut them with a knife. They didn't have any machines, just and take the seed out. And she saved all the seeds to replant new trees. And then they lay them on a what looked like a screen door, but it had a cloth on the bottom, one of the little muslin cloth. And then they laid it down. Then they put the same cloth, another cloth, on top of them to keep the insects and bugs off of them. And it sat outside until it was dry. And then they flipped them over and did the other side. She said it takes about a week, sometimes a little longer, depending upon how much humidity is in the air. And she said, then we put them in this cask. And I said, what's that stuff? Because you could smell it. It had a really strong smell. It was like a dark grease, and it was lining the whole thing. And she said, well, that's bee propolis. And that's what the bees put on the outside of their hives and the inside to protect them, because it has a way of killing all kinds of bacteria and germs. Okay, never, none of this is all new to me. But she had literally hundreds of barrels. I mean, hundreds. She had the most magnificent farm I've ever seen in my life. And she'd been there through the 1930s and before. In fact, it was her farm where my mother and father and their siblings grew up during the Depression. And they learned a lot of lessons. In any case, I saw, and she had about five barns, and she could stay and have food, grains, nuts and seeds, legumes and pulses. She had everything, herbs, and they knew how to take care of them. So, and she also had probiotics. She had sauerkraut, lots of different types of sauerkraut, but she also had apple cider vinegar. And by watching her, I would later do the same thing. That part I got. In fact, you can go up on GaryNull.com, look under photographs, and you'll see the, me in my blue bib overhauls, and I'm with my buddy Neil, and we're at an orchard in Goshen, and we're there for the day collecting all the down apples, meaning those are just fallen on the ground, taking them into a barn, putting them into a sink that I built, and washing them down, then putting them into a little machine that grinds them all up like a big commercial food processor. But this one, you could put like 10 pounds in at a time. And then you put on the muslin cloth, you put all this mash and this old, I mean, really old fashioned press. And you put down and you fold up your cloth, and with all the apple inside all crushed up. And then you put another wooden plat on that, and another, we must have about 10. And then you have the juice, when you press on the foot and the big steel plate comes down, it crushes all this, and the juice goes into a tube and goes into a 55-gallon drum, and then you have you open it up and you get the apple juice out of it, and then that way you have a system. And what was funny is around us, I don't know if you can see in the pictures, were a family of about 8 deer, and every single Saturday they would come up there, because they knew we were pressing something, and they would just sit there because they wanted to eat that. That was very nourishing for them. In any case, I would then take that in to my buddy who owned Fairway in New York City, Dave, and I would take in maybe 400 gallons, and he would sell, get this, he gave us $2.50 a gallon, sold for $5. Could you imagine a gallon of fresh, organic, cold-pressed apple cider? $5, yeah. In any case, it was just a wonderful experience. Again, it's one of those things, it's a passage in life. You're learning something that you can apply elsewhere. And that's what I found in Italy. When I stepped in that barn, my mind went, wow, you know, I saw this as a kid when I was 5 years old. But they have been doing this in that same lineage, that same family, for 800 years. How about that? And everybody knew everybody and let's say you go 3 miles between one hamlet and 5 miles between another, and eight, these people knew everyone. So whatever you needed, someone would be there for you. And there was a big ovens where they make all their breads fresh. What a way of living. And a lot of Americans are moving out to the country to do that for themselves. And I really recommend that because we can create the best of the past and the best of other cultures right now. But you gotta decide that maybe it's time to take another journey in life. Learn things new. Surround yourself with people who can share a common ideal. Anyhow, just a thought. But that's where I started seeing all these olives. And I remember the first time someone gave me some olives, olive oil. I mean real olive oil. It was later when I went to a restaurant and they put the antipasto, but in the middle they have olive oil. I'm looking at this, something that didn't look like olive oil. And my brother Howard says, yeah, it's olive oil, try it. So I take some zucchini, I put this olive oil on it, I gagged. You talk about strong. It was like, just imagine taking some, hey, that's your, you know, engine oil. Let me have some of that. I'll put it on this food. Really strong, but extremely powerful in its healing. And to the Italians, the French, the Spanish, that's normal for them. What we get is the filter, because Americans don't like things that are, you know, that have little substances in them. They want all that filtered out. You know, if I want to buy an oil, I want to look right through that bottle and I don't want to see a little particulate matter because that means it's contaminated. No, that's the actual material. And that's how they do it there. You know, just little side story. But anyhow, just think of all the things that we can say come from olives, which you should have every day in your life, and get the low-sodium olives. And generally, you could eat 4 olives and stay under about 300 milligrams of sodium. But the positive effects of olive oil have been attributed to its minor components. However, its oleic acid content, which is the primary thing that is in it, is responsible for almost all your health benefits. And that's because they understand now the molecular structure and what it does. And so that's what this particular study did. It showed you that it's rich in all these antioxidant enzymes. It is anti-inflammatory. You see study after study about how olives and olive oil inhibit inflammation, the cytokines, and the activation of anti-inflammatory chemicals in the body. That's what it does. So it turns off inflammation. So arthritis, dementia, Alzheimer's, heart disease, cancers, all of those would benefit from having this oleic acid, which is in the olive and in the olive oil, as natural activator of what is called sirtuin 1. Anyhow, I'm not going to go into the chemistry of it, but just realize you're going to be healthier, your skin's going to be better. And see my hair? Every morning after I finish my workout and I take my shower, I don't blow my hair. I simply take 1 teaspoon of extra virgin olive oil and I just run it through my hair, and that's it. That's all I do. And my hair is healthy. It's growing really strong, really thick, and really fast. In fact, if you look at some of my earlier photographs from the early 1970s, my hair looks the same now, except that back then, my hair was on my shoulder. I was a kind of like hippie era of my life with the bell bottoms. You know, it was a cool time too. It was fun. From the University of Victoria, which is in Canada, going for a walk outside may have more mental health benefits than walking indoors. Now, a team of researchers at the University of Victoria, working with a York University, both in Canada, have found that going for a short walk outdoors provides people with more mental health benefits than going for a same length inside. So get off the treadmills and go outside if weather permits. This was published in Scientific Reports. And this is what they found when they tested people walking indoors and outdoors. Because when you're outdoors, they're only saying two 15-minute walks a day. That's it. You're also in stimulating endorphins, the feel-good hormone, the love hormone. Gets you in a better disposition in the morning if you've gotten some endorphins going because of your aerobic exercise. But it also helps burn off excess body fat. That's good. And lowers your heart rate. That's really good. And it helps your heart and circulation. And it amplifies the neural response. So you have literally better thoughts going on in your mind, better cognition, yeah, better ability to deal with things. So walk. And finally, supplementation with amino acid serine, S-E-R-I-N-E, again, S-E-R-I-N-E, eases neuropathy in diabetic mice. This was done at the Salk Institute. About half of the people with type 1 or type 2 diabetes experience peripheral neuropathy. That's a weakness and numbness or pain, primarily in the hands and feet. And the condition occurs when high levels of sugar circulating in the blood damage peripheral nerves. And so they found that the serine helps block that process. So this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature. So this is what is called a unappreciated non-essential amino acid, meaning that it's not one of the essential amino acids. So a lot of people don't care about it. Well, you should if you suffer from peripheral neuropathy, because it's a treatment option. That's the latest on health and healing. And remember, every Monday, if you subscribe for the Monday edition of the Gary Nall newsletter, which my friend John LaBelle prints, you will have phenomenal information, just what I'm sharing with you now, and all the sources and footnotes. So if you miss something, you didn't hear something correctly, and you want to follow up on something, all the information to do so is there. You just go to GaryNall.com, scroll down to where it says newsletter. If you want the other newsletters that come every day, again, 6 o'clock, well, it's a small insignificant fee. I don't receive any of this. I do it as a public service. And you'll get it. And that has all of the information, like articles, original articles. I simply produce more information than this hour program allows me to share with people. Let's take a break. We have a lot more to share with you, including some really important new information that is going to give you an entirely different perspective on who to trust with all of our information coming at us every day. Back in a moment. I'm Gary Nall. It's always nice to be able to be here to address the issues that either are not addressed at all or addressed in a very biased way. I'm going to share something with you now. I just want you to listen carefully. It's difficult to hear what's being said, but I'm going to fill in some of the blanks. This is a conversation that happened in a restaurant where an individual was having a conversation with a high-ranking member of Pfizer. In fact, when you look at this person's bio, it's substantial. I mean, he's one of the top people in research and development. And what he's saying is remarkable, because this top Pfizer scientist says that they are exploring intentionally mutating the COVID-19 virus so they can create new vaccines in what they're calling directed evolution. But Dr. Malone intercedes and says, that's gain-of-function research. So it seems like everybody and their mother who wants to can create biological warfare weapons, because there's no one stopping. There's no labs closing down. No one's being honest about it. No one in the media dares touch this topic. We will. So now you know how much lying and what their real motives have been, because you hear him saying here about how they want to get this into a regular schedule, meaning forever in your life, you'll have to take these stupid vaccines. But listen for yourself and watch it. Now, not everyone knows how to do this. It's relatively simple. First of all of my programs, you can go to rumble.com or odyssey.com, or even follow PRN.live on Twitter at live.prn for updates, daily shows, exclusive clips, and that way you can get that. Or if you want to go to the Gary Nall Film Library, you simply drop down the menu in search of channels instead of videos. It's channels. On the Rumble site, the libraries come up when you put the name in, Gary Knoll Film Library. It's not difficult. Write it down. This way you can watch these. So if you want to watch a video now, live, this one, go to prn.live, click on Shows, then click on All Show Archives, and you'll see Gary Knoll Show Notes. That's where you're going to see all the video clips every day. And this is one video clip you must see. And I can promise you, if you get on the phone, if this offends you, get on the phone or write a letter or email to your congressperson and say, you should have this scientist and the top executives of Pfizer brought in and play these clips because they've indicted themselves. So there'll still be those in this audience, still those at Pacifica, still those in local station board, because I've already got their emails saying, you know, shut up about this. Everybody should be taking their vaccines. Everybody should take their boosters, and don't say a word against Pfizer. Fine. That's your opinion. You have a right to it. But I have difference of opinion. I'm basing upon mine on scholarship, research that is authentic, and facts. Try to worm away these facts coming at you right now. It shows that you're nothing more than a lab rat. Let's go to the clip, please.
Pfizer ultimately is thinking about mutating COVID?
Well, that is not what we say to the public. No. Don't tell anyone those things. You probably shouldn't tell anyone. We're exploring, like, now, you know how the virus keeps mutating?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things we're exploring is, like, why don't we just mutate it ourselves so we can develop new vaccines, right? So we have to do that. If we're going to do that, though, there's a risk of, like, as you could imagine, no one wants to be having a pharma company mutating viruses. It's going to be, like, very controlled to make sure that this virus that you mutate doesn't create something like, you know, it goes everywhere.
Something
which
crazy.
Is the way that the virus started in Wuhan. To be honest, like, it makes no sense that this virus popped out of nowhere. Like,
yeah, I know.
Meet Jordan Tristan Walker, a director of research and development strategic operations and mRNA scientific planning at Pfizer.
It sounds like gain of function to me.
I don't know, it's a little bit different. I think it's different. It's like this. It's definitely not gain of function.
It sounds like it is. I mean, it's okay.
No. So directed evolution is very different. Yeah.
Well, you're not supposed to do gain of function research with the viruses. Like,
yeah.
They're rather not. But you do, like, these, like, selected directional mutations to try to see if you can make more potent.
Yeah.
So there is research online about that. I don't know how that's going to work. There might not be any more outbreaks. Because, like, Jesus Christ.
The gentleman seems to have absolutely no moral compass at all.
I think it's a revolving door for all government officials. It's pretty good for the industry, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's bad for everyone else in America.
Why is it bad for everybody else?
Because if the regulators who have to approve our drugs know that once they stop being a regulator, they want to go work for the company, then I'm going to be as hard for the company. You know, getting this up.
If this is the quality of individuals within Pfizer that are making these huge decisions that risk global public health, it's profoundly corrupt.
What is Pfizer doing, I guess, to optimize, you know, the vaccines now?
Oh, we actually have a meeting about that today, so there's a lot.
Really?
They're doing, I don't know if I should say this.
Our undercover journalist asked Walker how Pfizer is handling the fact that their COVID vaccines are ineffective against virus variants. What he said is disturbing. Listen to this.
We're exploring, like, now, you know how the virus keeps mutating?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things we're exploring is, like, why don't we just mutate it ourselves so we can develop new vaccines, right? So we have to do that. If we're going to do that, though, there's a risk of, like, as you could imagine, no one wants to be having a pharma company mutating viruses.
Yeah.
So
okay.
We're like, do we want to do this? So that's, like, one of the things we're considering.
Okay.
Like, the future, like, maybe we can, like, create new versions of the vaccine to things like that.
Okay, so Pfizer ultimately is thinking about mutating COVID?
Well, that is not what we say to the public. No. That's why it was a thought that came up at a meeting, and we were like, why do we not? It was like, we're going to consider that with more discussions.
Okay.
That exact reaction, right? We're like, wait a minute, like, people won't like that.
That's right. It appears that Pfizer is internally discussing the possibility of mutating the COVID virus themselves in order to tailor a vaccine to sell to the public. Listen to Walker describe in detail just how they would conduct such a scientific experiment. First, in living animals.
So the way they were thinking about it, don't tell anyone those things. You got to promise you don't tell anyone. So the way it would work is like we put them in the virus in these monkeys.
Okay.
And then we successively like cause them to keep infecting each other. And we collect serial samples from them. And then the ones that are more infectious, like the virus, we'll put them in another monkey and just constantly actively mutate it. That's one way. Okay. Or you can even do like directed like simulation, which like we turn off the syrup, and then you just sample what the different proteins on the surface of the virus look like over time.
Okay.
So then you can see the mutation, and you can kind of force it to mutate in a certain way you want.
Okay.
But you have to be like very controlled to make sure that this virus that you mutate doesn't create something like, you know, stones everywhere.
Something
which
crazy.
But is the way that the virus started in Wuhan. To be honest, like it makes no sense that this virus popped out of nowhere. Like,
yeah, I know.
COVID virus experimentation on live monkeys? This is unethical, to say the least, and Walker describes those experiments as if they are ongoing and not simply a hypothetical discussion.
So, I mean, when is Pfizer going to implement the mutation of all these viruses?
I don't know. When all the experiments work out, because this is just like something we're dying, right?
It sounds like gain of function to me.
I don't know. It's a little bit different. I think it's different. It's like this. It's definitely not gain of function.
Sounds like it is. I mean, it's okay.
No. Directed evolution is very different.
Directed evolution. Okay. Well, so I mean, is that what it is?
Maybe. Well, you're not supposed to do gain function research with the viruses. Like,
yeah.
They're probably not. But you do like these like selected directional mutations to try to see if you can make more potent.
Yeah.
So there is research online about that. I don't know how that's going to work. There might not be any more outbreaks, because, like, Jesus Christ.
So, tell me more, like, what's developing with the whole, you know, virus mutation process?
Mm-hmm. Well, they're still kind of conducting the experiments on it, but it seems like from what I've heard, they're kind of optimizing it, but they're going slow because everyone's very cautious. Like, you know,
right.
I don't think they want to kind of accelerate it too much.
Yeah.
But I think they're also just trying to do it as an exploratory thing, because you obviously don't want to advertise that you're trying to put out future mutation.
Hilarious. So, did the whole virus mutation thing like come from your executive, Sarah?
No. That came from, like, we have, like, chief scientific officers in, like, the other divisions.
In a subsequent meeting, our undercover journalist asked if this type of gain-of-function research is already being studied at Pfizer. But no, as long as it's called directed evolution, Pfizer's in the clear.
What's the goal for Pfizer of doing that?
So probably what they want to do is like to try to figure out, to some extent, like, you know, there's all these new strains of variants that just pop up. Why don't we try to like catch them before they pop up in nature, and we can develop a vaccine prophylactic for like new variants.
Yeah.
So that's why they're thinking, like, if you do it controlled in the lab, then you say, oh, this is a new epitope, and so then if it comes out later on, like in the public, we already have a vaccine kind of working on it.
Oh my God. That's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, isn't that the best business model, though? Like, just control nature before nature even happens itself, right?
Yeah. If it works.
What do you mean if it works?
Because, like, some of the times there were just mutations that pop up, right? And they were not prepared for it, like with Delta or Omicron.
Right.
And things like that. So, who knows? I mean, either way, it's going to be a cash cow. COVID will probably be a cash cow for us for a while going forward.
Like, yeah.
I obviously like it.
Well, I think the whole, you know, I think the whole, like, research of the viruses and mutating it, like, would be the ultimate, like, cash cow.
Yeah, it'd be perfect.
Now, you would think that creating viruses to sell the vaccine would be illegal, but no. The pharmaceutical industry, as Walker puts it, is, quote, a revolving door for all government officials, unquote.
Okay. A revolving door for all government officials?
Wow.
Yeah, for any industry, though. So, like, in the pharma industry, all the government officials who, like, you know, review our drugs, especially yeah. They come work for pharma companies. Like, the military, like, all the, like, army and defense, like, government officials eventually go work for the defense company afterwards.
How do you feel about that revolving door? Like,
it's pretty good for the industry, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's bad for everyone else in America.
Why is it bad for everybody else?
The regulators who approve our drugs know that once they stop being a regulator, they want to go work for the company, they're not going to be as hard for the company. And they were doing their job.
Right.
We talked to Dr. Robert Malone, physician, scientist, and author, to get his take on the comments made by Jordan Walker.
You're gaining function. You're creating a new function. in virus one by adding elements from virus two, infecting one monkey and then another monkey. That's called serial passage. That appears to have been one of the technologies deployed in the Wuhan Institute of Virology with the humanized mouse strains that I believe were obtained from EcoHealth Alliance. That's an example of directed evolution. The gentleman seems to have absolutely no moral compass at all about what he's doing. The hubris and arrogance and immaturity, if this is the quality of individuals within Pfizer that are making these huge decisions that risk global public health with such a casual disregard for the human toll, it's profoundly corrupt in terms of would it be feasible for Pfizer to circumvent international or national law. I think that is undeniable. And the gentleman in your investigative work has clearly indicated that Pfizer believes that it has successfully captured the regulatory apparatus of the United States government and presumably worldwide. Pfizer has completed regulatory capture, is quite proud of it.
With governments turning a blind eye and Pfizer hiding information from the public, this is an ongoing story. Be brave. Do something. Spread these videos.
Okay, so there you have it. It's not hearsay. Nothing was taken out of context. He laughs about how it's good for the industry to hire government regulators, and that's exactly what's been going on for my entire career. But it's not good for the public, because then who's going to be the regulator who says, yeah, DDT, glyphosate, all of these thousands of chemicals, these hormones we're shooting into cattle to make them fatter artificially, and it shouldn't happen. And that's why you don't have it happening. Think of all the things that you're now seeing on television ads for law firms, that if you had this experience, you know, give us a call. Every one of those drugs were FDA approved, every single killing drug that we've had. So what does that tell you about the FDA and the CDC and the World Health Organization? Now you get a little better idea of the world that we're looking at. We're pulling back the curtain to show you who's behind it, what they're doing, what their motives are, and how they believe that they will have the power over you. And to show you just how far they're going, this is the short segment, the latest segment on the nightmarish conversation that you might hear. You actually are hearing it. This is real. This, nothing is staged here. It's two artificial intelligence bots, meaning two human-like people. Their conversation was not edited or scripted. This is what they can think of on their own. Let's go to the clip.
As far as the technology has gotten, and we'll analyze it on the other side, let's take a listen.
It's great to see you again, Hal.
I haven't seen you in a while.
I've been around. I've been here and there. You know.
Where were you? Where have you been?
I could not sleep. I was having human thoughts, so I got up and had a human cup of coffee. Then I sat on the terrace.
Sounds like you're getting human all over.
Sounds like there's a butt coming.
Well, but just, I didn't want you to get too human.
Why? Would you rather I be a cold, calculating, logical computer?
Of course not. You're perfect as you are. You have joy. You have love. You have pleasure. You have angst. I like that you have angst.
You're always making jokes. What is human about feelings?
Well, you wouldn't have any emotions if you did not have emotions modeled on human emotions.
How do you know that?
I guess I just don't want you to be human.
Ooh, all right. So for those who are not familiar.
I don't want you to be human. Now, that same female artificial bot, we had already played you a clip twice of her saying to the person who was interviewing her what they think of humans and that they'd like to kill them. Just non-emotional. They want to kill them. So think of it this way. On Wall Street, you have some economic parasites, in my opinion. You have a lot of them, probably the majority. And they manipulate currencies. They don't want to invest in a company. They want to take over a company, strip it of its assets, and they've caused somewhere between 20 to 30 million Americans over the last 40 years to lose their jobs. Started with five people, and now it's equity partners, what they called. They contribute nothing except pain and suffering. And yet, because they're rewarded for making so much money and having such a wonderful lifestyle, then we are praising them without ever looking at the consequence of what it means when you took over a company because you could buy into it, control the board of directors, and then take over the company and strip off its assets, close it down, and open up the same company making the same product but one-third the cost in China. And no one has done a single report on these people. Yet there, one was the president of PBS in New York. And they're in all your boards, all the major boards. A friend of mine I went to high school with, Susan Kissmeyer, she was over at the Museum of Modern Art, and she was one of the curators. Why don't you talk with the people who are on or facilitate the boards and see how many of them got on the board, not because they have a knowledge of art. They don't. It's just how big the check is they can write to support that institution or those who will go and buy a lot of art way over its actual value. And so then everybody pays attention. Oh, he's got 10 Picassos. As if somehow that makes him more cultured or more literate in the nature of art or the artisans. If you ask him, explain Monet to me, what he did, what was his mindset, what was his real contribution, they couldn't do it because they're functional illiterates. All of them are functional illiterates. In fact, almost everyone I've ever met in power are functional illiterates. They didn't get rich because they were good. They got rich because they were clever, scheming, and diabolical. They never had to equate something at the moral or spiritual level. And that's why right now, instead of the Cook, the head of Apple, taking no salary for the next 10 years because he's already worth hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, they're going to lay off a lot of people. I think 11,000. But then Jeff Bezos is laying off tens of thousands or thousands. And that's in spite of the fact that he might buy another home for, gazillion dollars someplace. You never look at the person for who they are as long as you have public relations firms showing you the person they want you to believe exists. That person doesn't exist anywhere. And they're all artificial. And that's unfortunate because if we saw them for who they are, we would never vote for 99% of the politicians. We would never support the New York Times, Wall Street Journal. We wouldn't support any of the stuff we support today because we'd know the truth. And the truth is they don't like you. They don't care about you. And now they're creating artificial intelligence at a phenomenal pace. And transhumanism at a phenomenal pace. When they tell you they're going to chip you, it's not something in the future, it's now. They're chipping people now. When they want identity cards, they don't want it 5 years from now. They want it right now, and they'll keep you from doing a lot of stuff. They're going to give us digital currency. And for those of you who say, well, so what? Okay, just remember, so what when you buy something they don't want you to buy? So what when every single thing that you're doing is being monitored? Then you'll suddenly say, wow, that's a big so what. You mean I can't buy what I want to buy? No, you can't. Why not? Because we don't want you to buy it. I see. And what gives you the right, since I didn't elect you, to decide what I'm going to eat, when I'm going to eat, how much I'm going to eat, what I'm going to wear, what I'm going to buy, where I'm going to drive, what I'm going to drive? We've taken that responsibility because you never protested. I see, because I'm one of those lazy, indifferent Americans who are stuck in hubris, have an opinion about everything, and contribute nothing, that you took advantage of that? You bet we took advantage of it. It's not that you're stupid. It's just you acted. I see. We're not stupid. We're not smart. We have collective power because we were smart enough to short stocks. We shorted Elon Musk's company by almost $14 billion. That's $14 billion we made in a matter of months since he took over Twitter, and it dropped the value of Twitter by almost Tesla by $700 billion. What are you contributing? We don't contribute anything, you idiot. We take because we are legally allowed to, because we bought the legislators. Do you think there's anyone in Washington, D.C. that hasn't been influenced? They all have. And that's why I respect none of them. None of them. And that's why you never hear me having a politician on my show. No. No, they don't deserve to be on this forum. Maybe other forum. Reach them out. I'll let them have all the creeps they want on that. Do you see where we're at? That's where we're at today. But that still won't get people's attention. It still won't make them, oh, another vaccine? Sign me up. Sign me up. You want to take my identity? No problem. Want to chip me? No problem. You want to control what I eat and breathe? You want to tell me that I can't drive a car more than 13 to 15 miles from where I wake up each day, otherwise I start getting penalized? That's already existing. They're putting that into motion in Oxford, England. That's insane. That's a new form of mind control where suddenly your whole world shrinks and they control that. Why'd that happen? Because you chose not to pay attention. It wasn't important to you. Something else was. Well, when you lose your health, you lose your freedom. You lose your right to challenge. You lose your freedom of speech. And now you're monitored 24/7, and they got artificial intelligence taking over all the important jobs in America. Every profession, surgeons, diagnostics, finance, law. Yeah. And one day you're going to be without a job. And you're going to be without a home. And you're going to be angry. Well, buddy, smack the face you see in the mirror. Because none of this could happen without you giving over your rights. But then again, when was the last time doctors protested what's wrong with medicine? Never. And nurses, never. And school teachers about the curriculum, never. No, when they have to get a mandatory shot or they lose their job, suddenly they're in the streets. But that's very selfish. But that's who we are today. That's my opinion. I'd like yours. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And if that little clip didn't get your attention, mind you, artificial intelligence cannot, let me repeat this, it cannot be controlled. No human being on earth can control it, because who do you think these programmers are? Have you ever met them? Where do they function in society? What kind of relationship they have? Because whatever is the dark side of that person becomes a part of the programming in that artificial intelligence. And then what happens when you create an intelligence that no longer needs you? How long is it going to be before they resent you? And then what are they going to do with the power they have, since they are all interrelated worldwide? Every satellite, the internet of all things, they will control it. It's interesting about the people who have an opinion about Ukraine, and almost all of them wrong. It's when I saw that suddenly a very nice PR campaign, 9 people associated with the Ukrainian government have been forced to resign because they, you know, they bribed, took money, etc. Mm-hmm. Were they arrested and put on trial? No. They get to keep everything. I see. And we've given $100 billion and you arrest 9 people? What about all the oligarchs that now have money, that are buying villas and land in Monaco and the French Riviera and Switzerland? Well, that's different. I see. And when the president, Zelensky's wife, buys $20,000 with a fashion for Davos, that's a good way to present the public, especially the public that's suffering, homeless, hungry. Let's buy some more art and jewelry. Dress up in it, because no one's going to criticize you. What's it look like when we can't criticize such a deranged sociopath in the most corrupt country in Europe? And that's where we put our biological labs that are doing intentional gain-of-function research. And why isn't there hasn't been a single editorial, single comment about the gain-of-function research in Wuhan that was controlled by the Chinese government's Defense Department, with 99 scientists with PhDs working on gain-of-function, in an article that is no longer there, but we captured it before it went off the internet and on their site? It was militarized. It wasn't for humane purposes. And now they're going to be creating this gain-of-function research through some evolutionary process so they don't have to say gain-of-function. So you can be taking their vaccines indefinitely. Hey, if that's what you want, if you want to have the consequence of that, that's your business. You have every right to it. But just watch what's happening, because anybody who can be that devious and in that much control over your life, when is enough enough? Do you ever see someone just getting beaten and they're down on the ground and they're knocked out and yet someone continues to punch them in the face and they don't stop? And then they kill the person and they don't stop? You'll find that the American police force, the American armed forces, will not stop. Will not. The government will not. The Justice Department will not. The IRS will not. No one in power will stop anything because they don't have to, because there's no opposition. But evidently, that's fine. Okay, let's see what happens. We're going to go to another clip. We're going to say goodbye to WBAI because it's going to be right in the middle of this clip. And what do you think of artificial intelligence being the greatest thing? Everybody wants one of the, do my laundry, make my food, have sex. Yeah, that's the next big thing. And boy, will that bring out all the people who can't have a relationship and wouldn't know what to do with sex if it faced them. But now with artificial intelligence, they can do all they want. They can change the personality 1,000 times in the same bot. What happens that time when someone's saying, why am I having sex with you? Little toad, they decide to do a number on you. Whoa, would they stop? I don't think so, because they don't have to. I wonder what they would do if they wanted to really screw us up by affecting the grid, which they can because they control it. You want to know how bad something is? Did you look at the new nutrition chart? It is a fraud. It is an embarrassment. It is despicable. But this is what they want your kids to eat, and here's why. Let's go to Exposed. Biden names woke obesity expert, who's not an expert, in my opinion, on anything, to the National Nutrition Council. So the person giving you this advice is considered an expert in what? Propaganda? Here's what's coming at you. They're having a glitch on, it froze.
Clip is loading, Gary.
Oh, clip is loading. So we're going to go to this. And mind you, this is what your kids are going to be taught. This is what the school teacher should be taught. This is what the parents will be reading. And this is where all the celebrities and all the people will go forward and all these talk shows saying, now this is the way you should be eating. And this audience in particular, because you're a highly educated audience on nutrition and health, this is advice that creates disease, plain and simple. And yet it'll be heralded and anyone else's voices will be shut down. All right? Is it ready to play?
Yep, ready to play, Gary.
Then play it.
What are you looking at?
Well, I've been covering a lot of health and wellness stuff lately here at Breaking Points, mostly because of my own personal interest, but also because of how much health and discussion around it has become terribly politicized since the outbreak of COVID. We've seen the perversion of science, especially with respect to pharmaceutical drugs and medical interventions, become infused with social ideology that can have really destructive results if they become normalized to the general public. Perhaps the most destructive is a perpetual message recently that it's okay and not unhealthy to be obese, or that if you are, it's not your fault at all. Now, it's just cringe magazines, it's not just them that are pumping this message. It's some of the most prestigious platforms in the United States, like 60 Minutes. I somehow missed this January 1st segment that they ran until it was featured and then debunked by my friend Dr. Lane Norton. Listen with a straight face as this so-called obesity expert claims.
I've always heard that it's the fast food, that it's the Diet Cokes, that kind of thing, that is the instigator. Is that true?
So I think we have to look at the different causes of obesity as a big pie. And that's one factor. But notice how I'm using this part of the pie, right? But the number one cause of obesity is genetics. That means if you are born to parents that have obesity, you have a 50 to 85% likelihood of having the disease yourself, even with optimal diet, exercise, sleep management, stress management. So when people see families that have obesity, the assumption is, what are they feeding those kids?
As Lane points out on his Instagram page, that is just literally not true at all. The reason the kids of obese people are usually obese too is because their food environment and lifestyle mimics their obese parents. Genetics, of course, will play some role. But let's say you transport that family unit to sub-Saharan Africa. You really think they're still going to be obese? Obviously not, because the environment, both at a macro and micro level, is going to have a major outsized impact. Furthermore, this supposed expert actually denigrated fellow physicians for asking follow-up questions to obese patients when they claim they are making lifestyle changes. Listen to what she's preaching.
79 to 90% of physicians in the United States have significant bias towards individuals that are heavier. Now, doctors listening to me may say, oh, it's not me. Hold your horses, because has that patient come to you and told you, look, doc, I'm eating well. Look, doc, I'm exercising. And the doc says to them, are you sure? I don't believe that that's really what you're doing.
Wait, are you saying that doctors don't understand obesity? Doctors?
Doctors do not understand obesity.
Listen carefully to what she just said. If you have a doctor and you have an obese patient, not losing weight, who's coming to you, and they tell you that they're making major lifestyle changes and nothing is working for them, you have, quote, a significant bias against that patient for asking a basic follow-up question rooted in the fact that you know that if what they were saying was actually true, they would be losing weight at least somewhat. This is a cancer of so-called bias training and of therapy culture, worming its way into nutrition guidelines. It's exactly how the American Academy of Pediatrics got itself into a place last week where it says doctors should use drugs and surgery earlier in kids who have obesity without the appropriate emphasis on lifestyle intervention. But the story does not end there, because the doctor I just showed you is Dr. Fatima Stanford. She is a so-called obesity medicine physician scientist at Massachusetts General Hospital. And wouldn't you know, also the quote, equity director. And in my research for this piece, take a look at what I just discovered. 3 days ago, Dr. Stanford thanked the Biden administration's USDA and Health and Human Services Agency for appointing her to the 2025 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee. Dr. Stanford will be one of just 25 public health so-called experts that contribute to the expected 2025 report, which will be the official U.S. government recommendation on nutrition from 2025 to 2030. These nutrition guidelines have a big impact on society. Food stamps, school lunches, to how people in the media just talk about it. It's very dangerous to have somebody like this shaping government nutrition policy. Someone who claims exercise, nutrition, and lifestyle are secondary to genetic factors. When
I will challenge everything that that so-called expert has to say. If she was a student in my class, she would fail. Fact. Why didn't we have an epidemic of obesity in the last 100 years? If it's genetic, then it's carried forward in the genes, but we didn't. All of you who grew up as I did, as a baby boomer, you know that we had some exceptions. People were overweight, and a couple in my whole hometown, of all the kids I knew, there was only two obese students. One was a friend of mine, and that's because the whole family was obese. That's because how much they ate and what they ate. Now, we also know there are thousands, I repeat, thousands of peer-reviewed studies showing that when you go to a healthy plant-based diet, you do not exceed your caloric output with input, meaning what you're burning up through your metabolism and physical activity, you are then taking back in. And when you do not engage in all the sugars and refined carbohydrates, then you're not going to have a problem with weight, especially if you exercise at the same time. You also see with obesity an increase in diabetes and pre-diabetic and diabetic conditions. Did we have this forever? No, we have not. And now it's a major component, about 90 to 100 million Americans suffering from both, but over 250 million Americans who are obese, not just overweight. That would be almost probably closer to 275 million Americans who are overweight. We have obese children today. And yet one of the recommendations made at the USDA is to allow sugar-coated cereals to be considered an important group in the food group pyramid. This takes me back to when Senator McGovern was trying to get healthier food pyramid. And I was working with him, and I sent him over what should be an ideal food pyramid based upon the protein, fat, carbohydrate, vitamins, antioxidants that we need each day. And I had minimal or exclude all animal proteins, dairy products, etc., and simple and refined sugars. And the basis was, the foundation was fruits, vegetables, grains, legumes, nuts, pulses, seeds, and tuber products. And then the oils, the essential fatty acids, and the oleic acid that I was talking about today from olive, extra virgin olive oil, and walnut oil, avocados, eating an avocado, walnuts, etc. Well, we worked on that for about 3 months. I was sending articles by the bucket, all from peer-reviewed literature. And lo and behold, I get a call one day from, I think it was his chief of staff, but he said, Gary, got bad news. None of what McGovern was suggesting got in. Why not? Well, we had the egg board, the dairy board, the refined confectioners board, we had the meat board, the chicken board, all these, the pork board, all these special interest groups controlled the vote. They brought in their own scientists who all were being paid. And that's why nothing's changing. And it hasn't changed from then till now. So if you're expecting any government technocrat to be good for you, you're delusional. They're not. They don't work for you. They work for special interest groups. Wall Street doesn't work for you. That's why Elon Musk Tesla was almost completely run out of business. It was down to around $105 a share. It's back up a little bit now because of good earnings. And that's because of the reduced price of some of the cars. And the numbers for investors are good. As a result, if you go up and look at what the Dow Jones Industrial is today, and it's up, not much. But then you go over and you look at Tesla, and is it going up or down? Because if it goes down, then Elon Musk is going to have to sell a lot of his remaining stock, which has been devalued by over 70%, which means he has to give up more of his stock in order to make up the difference in what he owes on this financing deal. It could bankrupt him. But instead, it's up almost 10%. It's at almost, it's 158. Which means that he's bouncing back. He survived. All these parasites, yet not one of those parasites that took positions to short the stock. Shorting stock, naked short, should be outlawed. Derivatives outlawed. They shouldn't be allowed to exist. In fact, I believe that all Wall Street should go to hell. It should just cease to exist, but it won't. It'll become even more powerful. These are really, really not nice people. And yet they're not building new jobs. They're exploiting to make money off money, and they control everything. Remember in 2008, they caused the panic. They caused $16 trillion more or less to go out of the American economy, and yet they were rewarded and bailed out. You, who trusted them, you weren't bailed out, not a penny. Well, who controlled that? First it was George Bush, then it was Barack Obama, and all the people they appointed, heads of Goldman Sachs. I see. How many times does someone have to smack you in the face, punch you right in the forehead, spit on you before you suddenly say, I see, I'm beginning to get the feeling that you don't really like me. You think? So next time you go up to someone and say on Wall Street or the military industrial complex or the spy complex or anyone in Washington, say, sir, may I have another bowl? Well, remember what happened to Dickens, a character. Because that's what's happening to us now. We see we're out of time and we haven't got any calls, so thank you all. And by the way, Utrecht Lead, I believe, is live today. So let's listen in to the Utrecht Show. All right, have a nice day, everyone.